Happy hour once again. How's everybody doing? And welcome to the Friday, the Wednesday edition of American Radio.
What
day is it?
Who am I?
It's hump day. That's what it is. I'm good. I'm all right.
So
hi, everybody. Welcome aboard. Thank you for tuning in and listening to WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, here every Wednesday and Friday at 5 p.m. Heidi Morales, Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, with me also as well.
Always by your side, my dear.
I have an amazing surprise for you.
What?
We're not going to do 1972 today.
Oh, that is a surprise.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a good one, though, because I'm always bragging on how,
Begging's
the wrong word. I'm always making a point of how obviously great it was, music was in 72. And today I decided I'm going to cover 1992. And
not so awesome.
Highs and lows, it's 20 years, man. It's incredible
to me.
It's like 20 years ago. I think I was here then. Not positive, but no, it's not possible. It is not possible. It's coming to think of it, no, I wasn't, because my book wasn't out yet, and I didn't get down here until my book was released. So forget that. Forget I said that.
Scratch that.
I did. I guess the reason I thought that was the case is I'm looking at some of my entries for the year 1992, especially from around this time, winter of 1992. And the entries that I have, I had written after the book was published. So I'm figuring, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I wrote this after I was here. That is true, but that's because the entries aren't actually in the book. We'll get it in 1992.
So we'll get it in 92.
What I want to do is, 92 is the year, a year anyway, pop music, what was happening on the pop charts, which is to say top 40 charts, was just flat out awful. And it's also kind of like has a lot to do with why my book ended around this point in time and why I'm really not that keen on updating it all the way to the present, because it was a book about pop music. And the past 20 years of pop music, I don't, out of 20 years, how am I even going to find 20 good songs? I don't know if I can. And I'm looking at what was around in 92 and I see what the problem was. Everything that was good was happening on albums, really. And what was happening on the pop charts was almost accidental. It was artists who put out good albums that released tracks from it. But if it was a pop out, if it was a pop song, oh boy. A good example, the first track I want to play is by PM Dawn. Now, they had a problem. I really liked PM Dawn in 1992. I think they were a great band. But they more or less appeared right in the middle of this commercial apartheid that was going on radio that really began to get totally out of control by 92. It's been there all the time. We've always been calling, white artists either pop or rock. Well, if you're a black artist, you were R&B. That's all there was to it. And it got to the point by 92 where you couldn't even cross genres. At one point in time, you could have heard, say, Aretha Franklin or Stevie Wonder very easily on pop or rock radio. But by 1992, artists like Boyz II Men, Whitney Houston, PM Dawn weren't given that privilege. So all that they were left with would be urban radio. And the problem that PM Dawn had was that they're trying to appeal to urban radio at a time when gangster rap was all the rage.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're hearing is songs that are severely edited on these stations where you can barely understand anything that's going on, because gangster rap, quite frankly, had, it was ridiculous to play that stuff on the air. Looking back on it, I think it's almost comical that 20 years ago
were even trying.
Yeah, that radio stations were dedicating, entire radio stations were dedicating their playlists to songs that they had to edit about 60 or 70 times per song. It was really incredible. And in the middle of all, now imagine Johnny Mathis trying to get played on a station that was playing gangster rap.
Right.
Or Smokey Robinson. If you understand how difficult that would have been, then you really get the problem that PM Dawn was facing. Because they were more or less hated by the street rappers because they weren't, quote unquote, credible. They didn't have the real street
cred. They weren't
tough
enough.
Right. They were writing pretty songs that were more or less crossover. So they were viewed as watered down, irrelevant to the only radio stations that would even accept them in the first place.
Sad.
It was a really bizarre place to be stuck, and really sad looking back on it, because these songs were really good. in their time. And if it had been almost any other time in our musical culture, I think that they would have fared better. And well, here's the song that was around in 92. It actually made it to number 3 anyway, so I really don't know why I'm spending so much time complaining, because it somehow did manage to crack the pop charts. It wasn't happening in New York. That's all I know, because from me listening, I just never heard these guys on any of the rock stations at all. But I always liked this track, and it's how we'll start our show, with PM Dawn singing, or rapping, what would you call it? Anyway, I'd Die Without You. Stuff was so good because their tunes are so atmospheric,
mm-hmm.
and I always loved that about them. Really melodic, and they were just, you know, cursed, you know, basically victims of their time. Because even though they did have these pop hits, I remember like going into the city to see them. And how did you with me? You went to some.
I came one time. Yes, I was with you.
Some club, and what, there was like 150 people there, maybe.
Yeah, but that was late in their career.
It was a little later, but that's just it. They were still making good albums at that point in time, like four or 5 years later. Maybe 10 years. Maybe it was around 2000.
Well, they suffered some bad publicity, didn't they?
Yeah, a couple of things did go wrong. Anyway, this was them at the peak of their game 20 years ago. Another person who is peaking, maybe not financially or commercially, but I think artistically, Prince was at the top of his game in 1992. Most people would say that the whole Purple Rain thing was the peak of his career. Certainly from a fame perspective, that was his biggest album. That goes back to, what, that was maybe about 84?
Mm.
About 8 years before this.
Right.
And he had moved through a whole bunch of different changes. There was, he went through that, like the Raspberry, Around the World in a Day, I remember came out. Sign of the Times came out, the double album, which was really good. A few other records, Love Sexy, all good. But sometime around 92 or maybe 91, he got together with the New Power Generation. And this band was hot. These guys were good, smoking band. And this, the record came out that was The Symbol, and I think that this was just before he changed his name to that symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So this, at this point in time, it was just the name of the album.
Oh,
but
I didn't realize that was how that worked.
Yeah, the record was credited to Prince and the New Power Generation, and then soon after that, when he, like, you know, the whole Warner Brothers thing went into the bag, he started using that for his name. Instead
he became Unk.
Yeah, the Unk, whatever.
Whatever it was.
But the album itself was fantastic. I believe it was just simply called Prince and the New Power Generation. And the song that summed it up is, I guess, this single. It didn't do well on the charts. I'm kind of amazed because it did make my book as one of my favorites. But the song, My Name is Prince.
That's a great number.
Great song. It only made it to number 36 on the pop charts. The big hit from the album was the song Seven. That made it to number seven.
Ironically.
Yeah, right. I don't know if that was planned almost. It's funny. The song that couldn't get too much higher was Sexy MF, for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I mean, that's another
but
one.
But that
a good
was a
example.
Hot number, too.
That's a great song.
It was probably better in clubs.
I mean, every time I heard this, I'm like, this is an amazing rhythm track. I mean, that's just it. That just shows you how great that band was. But this song, even this song required a little bit of editing. I hope I queued up the single version. It says I queued up the single version. But here it is then, from that album, Prince of the New Power Generation, My Name is Prince.
Come to fuck around. a new jack in the bullpen. Watch it digging, your dragon's leaking. What is it you're seeking? The sick of pain and riser at the peak when you jumped off. My, that's one thing I don't play the dodge cap, but you pick for you anyway. You're just a simpleton. I'll bust it like a pimple, sun is stars to bright. Boy, I'll sink it like a ship beside adventure. You bump a ditches to be kind. Sure, there must be more coming from your mouth than manure. So with the bow on his spray, I say, hey, you must become a prince before you're king anyway.
Where'd you go, dude? Where is he at? You know, I was complaining for about 10 years about Prince releasing way too much music.
You haven't heard from him in a long time.
He's done the exact opposite. Now he's gone underground almost. It's kind of odd. I mean, for a while, he definitely overexposed himself, no pun intended. You know, saturated the audience with music. He was releasing, you know, double albums, triple albums, quadruple albums, like every 3 or 4 months, it seemed. It was impossible to even like listen to like the previous record before, until the next one came out, and then put out a triple CD set. And then, you know, you try to listen to that once, and then out would come another double set. And he was like, you know, he had competing, because Warner Brothers was competing against him at the same time, since he sort of dumped them, or vice versa. And, you know, depending on your perspective. So they were like trying to clean out their files while they could of what material they had. And he was trying to basically override them by releasing more material, better material that he had that was newer. And it was all too much. And it kind of like, it all kind of blew up.
It may have backfired on him.
It did with me, because I began to find it impossible for me to like even follow
the
guy.
How do you keep up with that?
It was really, really hard.
Should have just let nature take its course.
Right. Right. Well, now it's like, I think it's about 2 years since he's released an album, and you don't hear from him as much. I mean, it's only natural that you basically chill out as you get a little bit older. But, I mean, listen to the energy on that song.
Amazing.
He's obviously got energy to burn. So, yeah. Come back, Old's Forgiven. We miss you. We could use you now, Prince. It'd be awesome to have you around.
Old's Forgiven. We don't need to forgive him for anything. Just come back.
Well, just for, right. We don't need, forgive me. I'll beg for forgiveness. I'm sorry. Better.
What did I do?
Yeah.
Just tell me.
Looking at songs that are 20 years old from the winter of 1992. What was happening on the pop charts 20 years ago? I find it hard to believe that it's been 20 years. Now, I know where my missing decade is now. I'm always saying somewhere in my life I lost 10 years. Now I'm thinking it might be more like 20. Ever since my kids were born, I just stopped. Time stopped.
That's why I didn't have kids.
That's the only reason I know that this time passed is like my 2-year-old son's now 22. If it wasn't for that, it would be almost as though everything's the exact same. I feel the same, more or less.
Kind of, sort of.
My fault.
Not really.
But there's, you know, there's a big difference between 34 and 44, 54, no matter how you cut it, right? Anyway, what's on the other side of the spectrum? There's Prince doing his thing, and another, you know, country music making big headway on the pop charts at this point in time, and it gave Katie Lang an opportunity to become fairly popular in a national way. Her song "Constant Craving" just barely cracked on the top 40 as well. While "My Name Is Prince" at number 36, Katie Lang peaked at number 38.
Wow,
which is, you'd expect it to have, both of these songs to have done better than that because they're so great. I don't want to tell you what was on the charts at the same time. Maybe I'll get to that. But the thing that worked for Katie Lang is that she finally figured out that she had the exact same problem that Patsy Cline had earlier on in her career. When Patsy Cline was younger, she wanted to sing all upbeat songs, and people, they were good, but people didn't really care as much. It was when Patsy Cline's handlers and her producers recognized that she had an amazing talent for singing ballads and sad love songs that she became huge. Same exact thing with Katie Lang. You know, she was singing these almost tongue-in-cheek, kind of goofy, you know, humorous country songs. And they were good. They had their appeal.
And Michelle Schacht.
Yeah.
Kind of
a kind. But Katie Lang actually, you know, she obviously had a phenomenal voice. And when they realized that she could apply it the way that Patsy Cline applied hers, everything changed. So the album Ingenue came out, and that all of a sudden she was this adult contemporary artist. She wasn't really country at this point in time. Although still had that edge, she would certainly still appeal to the country market, but it was the way that she suddenly was appealing way beyond that that had made a huge difference. So let's hear the track that sort of busted things open for her. At that time, 20 years ago, Katie Lang with Constant Craving. Discussing in the background as this is playing, this is one of the songs, I guess, that gave birth to the whole AAA radio format. What was that? It meant adult contemporary radio. I don't know what the AAA was supposed to stand for, though, exactly, to tell you the truth. I just remember I was afraid of it because when it was happening, I mean, I was way younger than 40, and it felt like it was aimed at people that were like 40 and up. And I'm like, God, I hope I never get that old. I still hope I don't get that old, frankly. I'm in such unbelievable denial. You don't even want to know.
Oh, please. You've got one of those funhouse mirrors when you look at yourself. I'm sure of it.
Well, we can put this. Is the next track going to start? We may as well let it roll if we can.
Please, don't torture me.
Now, we'll keep it way down in the background because I've got to say this. In our pursuit in offering an accurate portrait of our musical heritage over the years, like we do on this show, there's certain eras that I tend to avoid. The 90s is one of them, the early 90s. There's some great albums that came out around this time, but American Top 40, American Hit Radio, my book, was based on Top 40. So it means I'm compelled to at least play what was happening on Top 40 to cover the era to some extent anyway. But if I was going to be honest, in December of 1992, although I just played, four songs that were pretty darn good, at least three songs. This is the fourth. Three, anyway. I could dig three songs out of the charts that were pretty darn good. Most of what was happening, quite frankly, on Top 40 was crap. It was horrible. It was frightening. I mean, it was depressing and pathetic. Any era that features a Michael Bolton song as representative of its time is bound to be both of those things in spades, depressing and pathetic. And that's why I avoid it. I mean, but if I'm going to portray the era accurately, it requires honesty. And sometimes the truth hurts. So this is what we're doing now in the background. I know it's painful. Just to make my point.
Some people loved this stuff.
Okay, well, let's just take a... You're right, because it became... this was a huge hit. I'm going to just read off a couple of titles from the top 40.
I started chain smoking because I had to go outside.
Yeah, remember you saying that they'd play this
during
parties. You said, oh, I'm going outside to smoke just to get away from the music.
Like, oh, no, you can smoke inside. Oh, no. I wouldn't want to... really, let me go outside.
Tell me if you remember any of this stuff. Now, this is like number two on the pop charts. It was a song called Rump Shaker by Rex and Effect. That was cool?
Yeah.
All right, good. I don't remember it. If I Ever Fall in Love by Shy... I'm really showing my ignorance here. This is me walking away from pop music. Rhythm is a Dancer by Snap. Yeah. Don't like it. I mean, come on, like? That's not even a word I can apply toward, like, in the same sentence as saying the song title. Good Enough by Bobby Brown. Wow. Bobby Brown. I could say the same things I'm saying about Michael Bolton with him. Shanice with Saving Forever for You. A song apparently from Beverly Hills 90210.
Hot.
Wow. How Do You Talk to an Angel by The Heights?
Well, it sounds like a bad pickup line.
Yeah. Well, these are all pop charts. Deeper and Deeper by Madonna. I know a lot of Madonna hits. I don't remember Deeper and Deeper. Love Is on the Way by Saigon Kick. Hair metal was still obviously charting, doing well. Do You Believe in Us by John Cicada?
Thank God I don't.
When She Cries by Restless Heart or Faithful by Go West. Little Miss Can't Be Wrong by the Spin Doctors. Oh, I remember that. That annoyed the hell out of me. That was a rock and roll song that annoyed the hell out of me. Thank you, Dave. Yeah. The little swell of Michael Bolton in the background. It's good for us. How about Flex by Mad Cobra?
All these titles are just so heinous.
Really? Back to the Hotel by In Too Deep.
Oh, my God.
That was a hit song, man.
Double innuendo.
Years ago. Would I Lie to You, but not Annie Lennox. I'm talking, or her band. This is Charles and Eddie.
Yikes.
Okay, are we safe?
Never again playing that.
Talked our way through it. All right.
Shoot.
I can say... I'm one of the few DJs that is willing to torture his audience.
I'd rather you read the encyclopedia than go through that again.
I am willing. I had a conversation with another DJ friend about this. He goes, wait a minute. Let me get this right. You play songs that you hate on your radio show. I'm like, yeah, damn straight I do. It's like, why would you do that? I'm like, well, my show's about education, and if you really want to understand the era, you got to really kind of get the bad with the good. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to play, I don't want to torture my audience to the point where I play nothing but bad music.
And yeah, well, everybody's ears are bleeding right about now.
Well, at least we got to talk about it and over it. Let's get to album tracks now.
Chewy.
Because this, oh, wait, we got one more single. I do got one more single. Okay, wait a minute. U2, the, what's the name of that album? Octung Baby. Was fairly huge at about the same. That album had five singles off of it. And some of them are a bit overplayed. One, is which is a great song, but you've heard it like 1 million times. This song didn't get quite as much attention, and I always liked this track from that album. U2, Overexposed, yes, no doubt. It's kind of hard to hang on to a band when they get that much airplay, but this song was pretty cool in its time. It's called Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses.
Wide rose the doors.
Thus concluding the singles portion of the program. I got to divide it in half, at least in half. I mean, tell you the truth, if I had thought about this for more than 10 minutes, I probably would have skipped singles altogether. But actually, I did want to cover it because it is something that, like I said, reverts back to when I was writing the book. And it makes, and I think it is important for us to get what was happening with pop charts versus albums. Now, the thing about the albums is that they were coming from, as they still are, they really always have been, but the diversity of stuff was incredibly cool in 1992. And the first thing I want to play is by somebody who I actually didn't get into until a couple of years later. Before 1992, I had heard of bands like Rank and File. I had even had their album. I knew that there was a band called The True Believers. I didn't know much about them. I didn't have their record.
So you're saying you weren't a true believer.
Right, or a fan of True Believers. and I knew that there was, as a punk guy, I knew that there was this, pretty cruddy punk band from the West Coast called The Nuns, and I had paid them no mind whatsoever. And I didn't think that they would have, why would that be relevant to me, especially by 1992? Who would care? Well, out of that series of bands, which really did not hold much promise, was this guy named Alejandro Escovedo. And that meant nothing to me either. But in 1992, he released his very first solo album. And to talk about talk about coming out of nowhere and being and putting out your first record and have it being so completely different and so stunningly awesome compared to where you came from. I mean, everything that he did up to this point was seriously flawed in a lot of ways. There was stuff that was good about it. But there was it never even suggested greatness. It maybe suggested that he was good at what he did. But, I mean, greatness? Not a chance. This record in 1992, his first album came out called Gravity. And it was, it was a heavy record. It was every song. It was just like it sucked you in. It would make like it would give you goosebumps. So a lot of people still don't even know who this guy is. He's only made since then about maybe a dozen albums. Critics have loved just about every single album that he's released since then. And, critics are always right, right? Well, this goes way before the critics even had a chance to formulate an opinion. It didn't sell much. But going back over this great career of his to his very first solo album, it's very stunning to see how incredible and stark it was at its time. So let's play one track from the album and entitled Gravity by Alejandro Escovedo. This song is called By 11.
Castle's clean. And I hope his life's complete. Leave the light on, he'll be home by 11. Leave the light on, he'll be home by 11. We'll be there when his ship comes in. He'll bring you pure silk and some sweet perfume. While the man who plays, you dance around the room. Leave the light on, he'll be home by 11. Leave the light on, he'll be home by 11.
One guy, this is an album that made me wish that I was just talking about this, you know, when the song was playing. It was around this time that I had my nose buried in books because I was starting to, well, I was doing all the research for my own book. So I was spending every day of my life reading about music history and taking notes and getting immersed in the 50s and the 60s and piecing together ideas so that I could come up with, you know, basically what I needed to write for myself. And since that took up so much time, I would say that it was probably 1992, 93 were the years when I was the most distracted from what was happening in popular music. In a lot of ways, this is why I'm not a big fan of the Pixies, for example, or even Morrissey's band, the Smiths. They were huge around the time that I was writing my book. And I ended up kind of missing it. I think those are two bands that I would have been listening to a lot more at that time had I been paying attention. But reality is what it was. And now I play catch up. Love those bands now. But I love them from about 15 years removed, or maybe 10 years removed, because it took me that long to catch up. In a lot of ways, I'm still playing catch up. It only makes sense because, you know, every day enough music comes out to keep me listening for a year. So you choose from among that sort of quantity of material what it is that you're going to spend your time listening to. And by the time you play it once, there's a whole new bunch of stuff that needs to be heard by the very next day. I'm complaining lately because I don't even think I get to hear the same song twice anymore. It's just the way that things go. Which is one reason why it's fun to do.
Welcome to my life.
Right. Why retrospective shows like this are fun and why it's good to get perspective, because at least it points the finger at what at least we've discerned to be good and bad about a certain time, or I've discerned it in my own opinion. You, of course, might not agree with me. Like I said, you know, critics are never wrong. Neil Young was turning, he was pretty close to 50, maybe in his mid-40s. It's hard to believe. He was younger than I am now.
Yikes.
In 1992. Yikes! And he wanted to make a follow-up to the album Harvest. So we got together with guys like Stray Gators, who were the backup band on that album. And here it was, maybe, it's crazy, but it was 20 years later. So he's due to make another one. It's 20 years again. Harvest is now 40 years old. Put it in perspective. So here at the exact midpoint from Harvest to then and from then to now is the album Harvest Moon. Here's Neil Young from that album with the song called From Hank to Hendrix.
These streets with you. Here I am with this old guitar, doing what I do. I always expected that you would see me through. I never believed in much, but I believe. Love your smile. Now we're headed for the big divorce, California style. I found myself singing like a long lost friend. The same thing that makes you live can kill you in the end. Distance between
Neil Young, still with us now, 20 years on. Just put out a double CD of tracks. Typical Crazy Horse Insanity. He's always doing something. Either, you know, this time the idea is to like just basically jam out for, you know, maybe 7 or 8 hours per song. You know, three or four chords and see where it goes. Ah, Neil, you're an interesting character though. And that was a great album back in 92, Harvest Moon. I was glad for that. Another thing that was happening, again, like, you know, on the outside, wasn't getting much airplay. This is what's really stupid about 1990. It makes me mad when I think about it. I'm getting angry. You know, you get these radio stations that would still play, like, the junk that the Eagles put out in, like, the 70s.
They're still playing Boston, okay?
Yeah, they're playing Boston and the Eagles. And in the meantime, you get a band like the Jayhawks that come out, and they make music which is really not at all unlike what the Eagles were doing. It's got great harmonies, really interesting, intelligent songs, but, oh my God, it's something new. Oh my God, it's intelligent. Oh, what was wrecking it, I guess, is the fact that it was unfamiliar. We didn't get 20 years to get used to it and listen to it. Well, if you ignore it, you never will. And now you blew it. It's too late now. You know, the moment has passed. And this is why I hate commercial radio so much.
It's the definition of a curmudgeon.
Yeah, it's really, that's me. So I hate commercial radio, though. I mean, they really do. They step all over our culture, slamming things down our throat. I mean, honestly, I'm a big Who fan, but if I hear Won't Get Fooled Again on the radio one more time, I am liable to basically stick my head in a fishbowl. I can't stand what they're doing to me by taking some of my favorite music, turning it into Happy Birthday, and then ignoring other stuff that could have been really good, become part of our lexicon, part of our culture, and destroying it by ignoring it in its moment, and some great careers end up going nowhere as a result of it. That's what basically happened to the Jayhawks, as far as I'm concerned. Hollywood Town Hall was a really good album. I'm not saying that it would have been the same thing as Hotel California. I'm not trying to say that at all. But I'm saying that in the way that the Eagles appealed to their audience before then, say 1973 or 1974, that's something that the Jayhawks had a chance to do in 1992, where they could have had their own moment, but they were denied that. And here's why. Here's a track from the album called Hollywood Town Hall called Crowded in the Wings.
Taking you so long, where can you be? I would have laid my life down for you. Nothing seems real. Nothing seems real now that you're gone. Have you seen the sisters? Blue-eyed curls of gold. Helen, no one there to be seen. The sunlight looks down, stripped bare to the ground, held by the leaves. Been crowded in the wings, mostly I don't mind.
You know, I have no idea what the time went. I had another five or six songs I was ready to play. I spent too much time talking, but I had a great time today. Hope you did too. It's fun. Fun today, as usual. Today's show was a good
less
time.
Less diatribes, more music.
Ah, diatribes the best part, right? I'm entitled to say that. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Hope you can join us on Friday, by the way. We're going to be back, of course, with the How Music Changed show. Be looking at the Beatles, of course. We're still on that. We're going to be playing the second part of the White Album in mono, the mono mix. So it's different, guaranteed. So if you want to check that out, it's a pretty rare thing here in America. So we'll be doing that Friday, 5 p.m. Hope you can join us. Take care, everyone.
Bye.